Someone saw somebody run out of the room with blood on his pants.
The pain was so excruciating.
She's the victim of a brutal assault.
She was met with disbelief and discouragement.
More than 20 years later, her attacker comes out of the shadows. And a similar assault on the very same campus raises new questions.
She said she was brutally gang raped by 7 fraternity brothers.
You saw protests out there. People were enraged.
The intense debate makes sexual assault on campus a pressing national issue.
The perpetrators were still walking around.
I used to sit down on my porch just wondering if he was going to come for me.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own. It's America's leading journal, Vanity Fair. Contributor Sarah Ellison reveals the truth behind Shadows on the Lawn. September 2005, and summer is slowly turning into fall.
We were about to take a late summer vacation and go out to the Hamptons after the crowds.
Liz Securo runs her own event planning business. Her husband, Mike, is an investment banker. They have just packed up the car and are heading to Long Island with their 2-year-old daughter, Ava.
And I'm like, stop the car. Get the mail. There was like a letter. It was vanilla scented. It said, "Dear Elizabeth, in October 1984, I harmed you. And then it takes my brain like a few minutes to realize that he has my home address. I'm actually a scared little girl again.
It has been 21 years since 17-year-old Liz Schimpf loaded up her car and headed off to college.
I grew up the only child, adopted, of my 2 very Irish Catholic parents, and I had a really wonderful childhood. I graduated number 1 in my class. And I was the first person in my family to have even applied to go to college.
Liz is ecstatic that she was accepted by the University of Virginia.
I wanted to be a writer. UVA had such an amazing English department that I knew that's where I wanted to go.
I went to UVA in the 90s. It's a really sort of old school atmosphere. There was a real sort of pride from the very beginning that it operated by its own set of rules. And you don't call the UVA campus a campus, you call it the grounds.
Thomas Jefferson founded and designed the university just miles from his Monticello home in picturesque Charlottesville.
When I arrived, it didn't disappoint. It's like Hollywood conjured up a university.
Liz is on campus just a few weeks when she gets invited to a fraternity party.
We were all just hanging out in the dorm, and a bunch of the guys were going to a rush party at Phi Kappa Psi. And my friend Jim asked me to go. It was always best if they were accompanied by a girl.
People sort of pride themselves as UVA students that they are fun to be around, they're a good time, they're really smart, but they're not morose.
I was already in like sweatpants and a t-shirt, and I was like, oh, I don't want to get dressed. I thought, if I go for an hour, and be a good friend. And on went the Guess denim miniskirt, the Mia leather flats, and the, like, United Colors of Benetton sweater. It's a party. How bad could it be?
Liz, Jim, and a few other friends walk over to the Phi Kappa Psi house around 11 p.m.
I remember there being very loud music. It was only within a few minutes of just sitting around sipping beers that, you know, a group, two or three brothers, asked us to go on a house tour.
Liz loses sight of her group when the tour moves upstairs.
These brothers were like, hey, we're gonna go in the back and, you know, smoke. Do you wanna come? I was like, I'm gonna pass. I remember seeing Jim walk down a hall, like away from me. And I thought, well, I'll just wait here. There were two brothers. They said to me, hey, would you like to have a drink? This is our house special. And it was a very tart, sweet, limeish, pale green drink. Almost immediately after taking a few sips of the drink, I just felt like I had no control over, like, my bodily functions, like speaking or standing. It was truly frightening. I do remember a really tall young man with glasses coming over to me, and he was just asking me lots of questions, and I just remember wanting him to leave me alone. My next memory, although disjointed, was very sudden and swift and violent. This guy with the glasses, he leaned over into my ear and shouted, I have something to show you. And he dragged me down a long hallway. And somehow I knew what was about to happen. I was a virgin. I was thrown on the bed and I was pinned down. And I couldn't breathe, and my head was smashed against the headboard. And he told me to behave. The pain was so excruciating. I remember thinking, well, I'm obviously going to die. And I remember saying a prayer that my parents wouldn't get a phone call and find me in this room.
Throughout the night, Liz slips in and out of consciousness.
I could hear the door to the room open. I saw light. I heard music. I felt hands. I heard somebody scream, what have you done? The first clear memory that I have was sun coming through the window, and I was on the sofa, and I was wrapped in a sheet. I was bloodied almost from head to toe.
Liz rifles through some papers on his dresser, attempting to learn her attacker's identity.
All of his, like, mail was on top of it. So that's when I learned his name. Everything said William Beebe. I was still naked in the sheet when the door opened, and in came William Beebe. The first thing I think is he's come back to rape me again. He smiled, and he did this. He went. And as he was walking out the door, he just turned around and looked at me, and he said, hey, I hope I was at least a gentleman last night. I found my sweater and my denim miniskirt. My shoes were there. I couldn't find my underwear. I knew what had happened to me. And I knew it had a word. And I knew I had to get to a hospital.
Liz tiptoes through the eerily empty house and makes her way to the UVA Medical Center.
I walked up to the desk and I said, I've been raped and I need some help. A nurse knelt down next to me and she said, sweetie, what you need to have done, we can't do here. Slowly dawning on me, what they mean is a rape kit.
The UVA Medical Center is one of the premier teaching hospitals in the country. The idea that that in 1984 would be their response is pretty shocking.
It was like a wall in my heart shut off. It was like, you guys can't help me.
Liz goes back to her dorm room, takes a shower, and sleeps most of the next 12 hours. That night, an unexpected guest shows up at the dorm.
I was in the bathroom, and another friend came running in. She's like, he's here. And there was William Beebe with somebody else, and they were writing in really thick, like Sharpie, on my door. Then he and his friend ran away. The message said, it's in your best interest to call me.
Liz Schimpf, a freshman at the University of Virginia, says she was brutally raped at a Phi Kappa Psi house party. 2 days later, the alleged attacker, William Beebe, leaves a threatening note on her door.
The fact that he knew where I lived was horrifying to me. To know that at any time this person could come back. Everyone is like, you've got to tell the administration. You've got to tell someone. You're not safe anymore.
The next Monday, Liz goes to the Student Health Center.
I had this really kind nurse. I absolutely told her I'd been raped. She took my vitals. She did a pelvic examination, but not what we know as a rape kit.
There was physical trauma as a result of the assault. She had lacerations and tearing.
She tended to my wounds, and I remember she gave me some pain medication. Then it was arranged that I would see the dean of students.
Almost 72 hours after the assault, Liz meets with the dean in Peabody Hall.
I told my story. He said, are you sure that's what happened? Maybe you need to take a break. Maybe this school is too much for you. And I said, I really would like you to call 911. And he said, well, I can't do that. The Charlottesville police doesn't have jurisdiction over that house. You can go to the university police. It was arranged that I would go to see Captain Michael Sheffield at the university police. And I went there quite a few times, and I made reports.
The dean assures Liz that he will deal with William Beebe himself.
I think I'm being helped now. And that's how we started down the attempted road to justice.
Liz struggles to get through every day. She's only told her closest friends. Finally, more than a week after the vicious assault, Liz tells her mother and father.
Both my parents started to cry immediately. And I'll never forget it. It's like the shame, like, transferred to them. And I remember Dad saying to me, "You call in the middle of the night, I don't care. The minute you don't feel comfortable anymore, you call, and I'm coming to get you, and you're coming home, and you don't have to stay here." When I followed up with the dean of students, he's like, "Well, I talked to the young man in question, and he says it was consensual." Like, everything I've been saying is absolutely discounted. And shortly after, I was told that William Beebe had left, so he was no longer a threat to me. He's no longer at UVA, so what are you worried about?
But Liz presses the university police to investigate the rape.
I went there quite a few times, and I made reports. And I was calling, and they're like, "Yep, no news, no news." All of the sources for interviews or witnesses were coming from me.
She tried to get the school to pay attention. She tried to get people to believe, and she was met with disbelief and discouragement.
It suddenly dawned on me that no one was going to help me. I remember going to the cemetery, and I had the clothes that I was wearing that night. I found a trash can, and I poured lighter fluid on them, and I lit a match. I just sat on the ground, and I just cried. I was like, "This is over. It's done. No one believes me."
During the following months, Liz struggles to deal with what has happened to her.
I was asking for extensions, I was taking incompletes, binge drinking every night.
Liz eventually finds the strength to move forward, determined to do what she came to UVA to do.
I earned my seat at that table, and nothing, and no one was going to take it away from me.
Liz joins a sorority, earns an A on her thesis, and graduates in 1988. Almost a decade passes before Liz Schimpf meets Mike Securo, the first man she feels safe with. The couple marries, and when Mike lands a job on Wall Street, they move to Connecticut.
We moved to the suburbs, and we had our first child. Ava was born on Christmas Day, 2002. It was just such a kind of a fairy tale.
It has been 21 years since the assault. And now, Liz Securo is sitting in her car with her family, holding a vanilla-scented letter from William Beebe.
Time stands still, and I'm basically reading the letter over and over and over again.
It seemed unbelievable that this would happen after more than 20 years.
11 days later, Liz responds to William Beebe.
"I wanted to know the totality of what happened to me that night." And we began a correspondence that went for months.
Beebe admits that he's reached out to her as part of step 9 in his Alcoholics Anonymous journey.
That was the motivating force. It's part of this 12-step program that he felt anyone he had harmed, he was trying to make amends. That didn't go far enough for her.
I got really frustrated because he just wouldn't own it.
Just after Thanksgiving, Liz Securo and William Beebe reach an impasse. Liz believes he knows more about what really happened that night than he is letting on.
He's like, "I'm admitting that I raped you. For you, this word seems very important. And, you know, maybe we should just end this."
But for Liz, it hadn't ended. It was all coming back.
I used to sit out on my porch every night till 5 in the morning, till the sun started coming up, because my baby was sleeping inside, just wondering if he was going to come for me.
the man who raped Liz Sicuro more than 20 years ago during a fraternity party at the University of Virginia has confessed to her. But Liz has not contacted the police. She remembers the school's dean telling her the Charlottesville police could not take on her case.
I was like, okay, what are my other options? I just started doing some research. I decided to just start like Googling like UVA rape statistics.
She finds a website dedicated to sexual assaults on the UVA campus.
Susan Russell is the mother of a young woman who said she was sexually assaulted at UVA. She started a website, uvavictimsofrape.com, and it became a place where people who had these experiences at UVA came together. When I was in school, people would say something was a bad hookup, but today we would call it something very different. And I think that the fact that people are coming forward and talking about this much more now is the main thing that has changed.
Liz reaches out to the website's creator, and what she learns sends her reeling.
Charlottesville police had jurisdiction over that fraternity house.
After all of this, the big bombshell, everything was a lie.
Liz immediately contacts Charlottesville Police Chief Timothy Longo.
I reached out and picked up that phone and heard that voice on the other end begin telling me a pretty horrific story, quite frankly.
He told me the straight stuff. There's no statute of limitations on felony rape in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Obviously, one of the most important things she was able to say is, I have this letter, I have this smoking gun, I have this confession.
I slept for the first time in months.
Charlottesville police officially open a new case and begin investigating the allegation.
There were notes that were taken by the dean, who she had met with at the time. We were able to obtain copies of those.
The only report that exists about what happened to me is 5 pages, handwritten, no date, no letterhead.
Police investigators start searching for witnesses.
Someone saw somebody run out of the room with blood on his pants.
This witness said, we thought there had been a shooting.
Liz says the university's report concludes she was given the opportunity to press charges with the Commonwealth of Virginia and refused.
No such thing ever happened.
William Beebe is arrested on January 4th, 2006, and charged with rape and object sexual penetration.
I remember just seeing it on television. He looked 100% exactly like I remember.
11 months into the pretrial investigation, Liz learns more about the one thing she fears most.
Claude Worrell, who was one of my prosecutors, he says, are you sitting down? I said, yes. And he said, you were gang raped. There are two others that we know of. I had been raped by at least two other people. It's the only time during the whole process that I actually screamed.
The story of what appears to have happened that night begins to take shape. First, one fraternity brother is alleged to have raped her while being cheered on. Another brother reportedly dragged Liz to his room on the third floor. He later left wearing just a towel, high-fiving his friends on the way to the shower, leaving Liz behind bleeding in his room. But with no one talking, these assaults are impossible to prove.
We never got the information necessary to hold them accountable. If there ever comes an opportunity or a time where someone picks up a phone and calls the Charlottesville Police Department and says, I've been holding back for a lot of years, I would like to talk to somebody, that reopens this case.
The case against William Beebe also proves to be difficult to prosecute, despite his confession. That tart lime drink forced on Liz that night, the house special, makes her testimony suspect.
I was considered not the best witness because of my lack of memory of the other two texts, which muddies the case. That's the irony. So what happened to me was so much worse, and yet it made the case not as strong.
On November 14th, 2006, William Beebe pleads guilty to one count of aggravated sexual battery.
But there's no jubilation or celebration. I'm happy that I'm getting more justice than 99.99% of rape victims ever will.
We all have a responsibility to take care of our friends, family, and children, to help them if it's happened, to listen, to not judge, to assist in the healing, to open a dialogue and not shy away from the word rape. We owe that to survivors.
I felt that it was important that I told my own story. I remember just wanting to use this moment to help rape survivors in the future.
In 2011, Liz Sicuro's memoir, Crash Into Me, is published.
There were a lot of people reading Liz's book on campus among the community of sexual assault survivors at UVA.
The same year Liz's book is published, the University of Virginia finds itself under Title IX review for mishandling cases of sexual assault.
Title IX promises that students who suffer from sexual violence, sexual harassment, have a route on campus to seek redress, and that their campuses will create communities that are safe for them. There were absolutely needs for UVA to change its practices and to come into compliance with Title IX, but it is so far from alone.
There are currently more than 300 active investigations of sexual assault underway at over 200 colleges and universities. In 2014, Department of Education Assistant Secretary Catherine Lehman testifies about Title IX.
It was my privilege to speak to the Senate. It followed from a White House task force that the President and the Vice President created on protecting students from sexual violence.
Also speaking are several student activists, including one from the University of Virginia. Little does anyone know that a shocking claim made by another UVA undergraduate is about to make national news and ignite a firestorm of controversy. Alex Stock is a first-year student at the University of Virginia. It's before midnight on Friday when he and a few other students hear from a close friend, Jackie.
She was very upset. She didn't tell us a whole lot. We were running at full speed across campus. We just knew something bad happened and that we needed to get there right away.
Jackie, who has asked the media to only use her first name, is a first-year student.
Jackie had said that she had this date function at this, you know, amazing fraternity.
Jackie gets all dolled up in this red dress.
before this date with the lifeguard.
The party had started out great, and she was led upstairs. And before she knew it, she was in her dark room surrounded by men she didn't know.
She said that she was thrown through this glass table. Jackie said that she was brutally gang raped by 7 fraternity brothers. And her date had egged them on and organized the entire thing.
Several hours later, she was able to make it out of there, covered in blood, barely surviving this horrific assault.
You can't even imagine that someone would have to endure this pain. You just want to wrap your arms around her and save her.
It's difficult for Jackie to get words out. She's bawling her eyes out. I would think it's a good idea to call 911, make sure she's okay. But Jackie doesn't want us to report this. She probably doesn't want to relive it. But on the other hand, is us not reporting it going to cause additional women to have to go through what Jackie just went through?
Jackie appeared very conflicted in terms of telling her story. When you're dealing with a survivor of sexual assault, the idea is that you don't want to force them to do something that they're not ready to do.
It is 6 months before Jackie tells administrators about the brutal assault. On May 20th, 2013, she meets with the Associate Dean of Students.
Jackie had described the administration as treating her indifferently when she had attempted to come forward.
While she discusses the alleged sexual assault, she refuses to either name her attackers or the fraternity house where the assault occurred.
Therefore, the people who were the perpetrators were still walking around UVA's grounds. And that was a really scary prospect.
And at that point, Jackie doesn't want to go through the university process and hold those accountable. Jackie doesn't want to go to the police department.
It has been more than 20 months since Jackie says she was gang raped. And now she is finally ready to tell her whole story. Sabrina Rubin Erdely, a contributing editor for Rolling Stone, begins speaking with Jackie and 4 other UVA rape survivors.
Sabrina wanted to touch base with survivors about how their accounts have been handled at UVA.
In an exclusive interview, Jackie discusses the full details of her sexual assault. For the first time, she publicly names the fraternity where the gang rape allegedly occurred, Phi Kappa Psi.
I was really glad that a mainstream publication like Rolling Stone was doing a long-form piece about the campus sexual assault issue.
The article, called A Rape on Campus, appears on the Rolling Stone website on November 19th, 2014.
It landed like a bomb. Everyone was reading it. It was the thing that everybody was talking about.
The article describes the University of Virginia as an institution so defined by rape culture that women have taken to calling it UV rape. And Jackie's story is seen as the evidence.
Like everybody else in the world who read that article, I was absolutely horrified. Bricks were thrown through the Phi Psi windows. Somebody sprayed the UVA Center for Rape Studies on the side of Phi Psi. There was a huge response and a huge amount of sympathy for Jackie.
The article is sharply critical of the administration's handling of sexual assault cases.
You saw UVA in that portrayal as a place where no one would believe or listen to you.
Sexual misconduct is now a national discussion. The University of Virginia is rattled.
You saw Greek life come to a complete halt. You saw protests. People were enraged. Everyone joined in against the university at the time.
The allegations in that article are absolutely outrageous. If that occurred in a fraternity in the city of Charlottesville, we need to investigate.
What investigators uncover takes the nation by surprise. In November 2014, Rolling Stone publishes an article detailing an alleged sexual assault and how it was handled at the University of Virginia.
A woman the magazine called Jackie recounts a gang rape in 2012 at the Phi Kappa Psi house by seven assailants. UVA's president has called on the Charlottesville Police Department to investigate.
When Jackie first came to the police department, her attorney says, "We're not going to make a statement today." Within a couple days, the attorney calls and says, "She will not file a police report. She does not want this investigated, and you are not to try to contact her again."
But Charlottesville police are obligated to investigate the assault. Their most important lead: the man who allegedly took Jackie to the party to be gang raped. She had told her friends that his name is Haven Monahan.
We spent the next few months trying to figure out who that was. And you basically do a proof of life. Couldn't find anything at all that told us that Haven Monahan was actually a real person.
While police investigate Jackie's story, Washington Post reporter T. Reese Shapiro is conducting an investigation of his own.
It wasn't, on my part, an effort to highlight or cast doubt on Jackie's account. It wasn't until Jackie's close friends and members of the sexual assault prevention advocacy community came to me and they said, "We now are beginning to have doubts about Jackie's account," that I thought, new ball game. And also some members of the fraternity. They were able to show me documentation that they definitely had not had a social function on the night in question.
Her photograph was taken inside the fraternity house that night at about 11 o'clock at night. And the house is empty. So nothing adds up.
Are you confused yet? Yes, of course you are, because the whole thing is made up.
2 weeks after the Rolling Stone article, the Washington Post begins publishing a series of articles documenting Shapiro's findings.
What I cannot say is that nothing occurred. And because I can't say nothing occurred to this young lady, it's a suspended case.
Rolling Stone retracts the article 4 months after publication. Jackie stands by her account and continues to refuse to speak publicly about the allegations.
The magazine apologized to its readers, saying there now appear to be discrepancies in Jackie's account. On UVA's campus, many fear that the debunked story will discourage future sexual assault victims from speaking out.
The main tragedy that came out of Jackie's story was there was this sense of doubt that came with every story of a woman coming forward and alleging rape. You have a statistic like 1 in 5 women are sexually assaulted on campus in the United States. And when Betsy DeVos calls into question the progress of Title IX, it's really demoralizing.
Secretary DeVos's decision to roll back vital protections for victims on campus, victims of campus sexual assault, is an alarming reminder of White House's dismissive and cruel attitude.
Title IX is designed to protect a category of harms that the criminal justice system doesn't address. There's absolutely no reason why the criminal justice system cannot do its work at the same time that a school is making sure that the school is a safe and appropriate place for learning.
Title IX is supposed to prevent the kind of thing that happened to Liz Sicuro.
The one man who confessed to raping Liz Sicuro has been held accountable. But she continues to hold out hope that one day she will face the two other alleged perpetrators in court.
My dad died on Christmas Day of this year. On his deathbed, he said, he's like, I know it's not finished. He's like, I want you to keep fighting. You need to get some final justice for what happened to you. I wish my dad, though, could see that final justice.